Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, here's a question for you. Should farmers be allowed to burn land on the sides of mountains to make it suitable for grazing by livestock, or should the practice, which has been done for generations, be stopped altogether to protect Ireland's dwindling biodiversity? Well, it's one of the issues that will likely be considered as part of the government review of the Wildlife Act, which is currently out for public consultation. I'm joined in the studio by ecologist Pádraig Fogarty and on the line by John Joe Fitzgerald, who's National Vice President of Irish Natura and Hill Farmers Association, and you're both welcome to the programme. John Joe, I'm going to start with you, because I know you represent farmers who work in the uplands and the land designated. Can you explain why you believe it is necessary to burn land to maintain it for agriculture?
Hello, I'm Claire, and thanks for having me on. Look, it's a tool that we use to manage our land. We are allowed to do it. I'm not saying that we should go out and, you know, burden every hill from West Kerry right up to Donegal. It has to be done in an ordinary and, you know, a proper fashion. And that's why we need to do it. Look, it helps, I suppose, if we go back through the generations, we were always burning a little bit of land. I have land myself in the back of my house, which we call the Park na Dóite. The burden fields, we used to burn them every second year in March, and that land was there. Then the green shoots were coming through for the animals, came off the hill, and that gave them, I suppose, put a pep in their step.
Okay, but so look, just to explain to people who aren't familiar with this, explain what it achieves for you as a farmer.
Well, the burning achieves regrowth. It generates regrowth of our land, and it's a tool we have to manage our land.
Because there are some who say, don't they, that if you don't do this, you're actually at risk of a wildfire taking hold, because you'll have the gorse there and the dried bush, which is like tinder.
Yeah, that's exactly it as well, Claire, there. You've seen what happened in the National Park in Killarney a couple of years ago. When the park wasn't managed properly, there was a build-up of fuel and stuff on the ground. Some blackguard went in, lit a match, and let it off. Mm. That's the consequences of mismanagement.
And how do you how do you do it properly, John Joe?
You see, if you do it properly, if you graze it properly, which we're allowed to do, and then at certain times, I'll give you an example. If you have a 2-acre field, there is a coarse field, and then you decide this year, all right, I'll take out that corner there, a 1/4-acre section, or maybe 1/2-acre sections, I'll burn that because it's gone overgrown, it's gone to scrub. It's no value for birds, bees, or animals. You do that, but you do it in a controlled and orderly fashion. There's rules and regulations to be followed when you do these things.
Mm-hmm. And the Wildlife Act currently allows farmers to do this between the 1st of September and the last day of February, but you want that extended, do you?
Well, we'd like to see it extended. Look, I took part in the Burn Winteridge School workshop it was up in Gort, October last year. Now, we had farmers from Wales, from England, Dartmouth in England. We had two French farmers in there. We had the NPWS, and, you know, we had environmentalists in the room, and we spent the whole day going through the details of burning, managing land and stuff like that. And in the end of the day, they all came to the same conclusion. We need burning as a tool, but controlled burning. And if I go back again to the Dartmoor, Dartmoor there, they're allowed to burn up until the 15th of April. Mm-hmm. But their equivalent body, I suppose, of the National Parks and Wildlife over there actually prefers if it was all the burning was done before the 31st of March.
Right.
So,
okay, John Joe, stay with me on the line, because as I said, I have Pádraig Fogarty listening to all of that, who is an ecologist. Not only do you not want this burn period extended, you want it stopped altogether.
Yeah, I think we need to be moving towards a land management model that does not require burning. Burning the land in any form is disastrous for biodiversity. It's disastrous for the vegetation and the soil. To date, what we have had in Ireland is uncontrolled burning. That's exacerbated by climate change and certain land use practices, and it has been catastrophic. We have no tradition of controlled burning in Ireland. This practice is done in the UK, where controlled burning is done for basically proliferating grouse so that they can be shot by wealthy people. And even in the UK, this is very controversial, and there are moves underfoot to limit and outlaw that kind of management. The other thing is that controlled burning has been tried in certain parts of Ireland in recent years, and it simply doesn't work, largely because the weather doesn't allow burning in Ireland. So I think it's also trying to hammer a square peg into a round hole. I mean, what are we trying to achieve here? We have catastrophic biodiversity loss, we have runaway climate change, we have inequality and low incomes for farmers. If we want to tackle all of those issues, we have to stop focusing our efforts on grazing sheep. This is really what the problem is. We can have farming, we can have rewilding, we can have diversified farm incomes, but we have to move to a different form of land management that does not involve burning, but rather habitat restoration, nature restoration, rewilding and high nature value farming.
So forget the sheep farming on the uplands. Is that what you're saying?
Sheep farming has been a disaster on the uplands. Not only sheep farming, I would have to say, we have a lot of deer, we have conifer plantations, and all of those activities have acted to dry out the land, basically draining the peat, promoting the growth of gorse, and reversing that would basically hold on to the moisture. What we want to do is re-wet the landscape, which is good for carbon, it's good for water. What we have to do is make that good also for the people who live there.
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? How does John Joe make a living then?
Well, I think that nut has already been cracked as well. There are projects out there that are paying farmers for nature restoration. Farming will be possible in some areas. It's not possible in other areas. Blanket bogs, for instance, should not be farmed. They shouldn't be grazed at all. But there are farmers who are moving to traditional breeds of cattle, which were the traditional animal on the hills if you go back more than 200 years. So we don't have to eliminate farming in the hills. We can promote a different type of farming, and we can promote habitat restoration. And I think the nut has already been cracked in how we can pay farmers to do that. It just hasn't been rolled out widely enough.
Okay, John Joe, how would you feel about that? Forget about the sheep farming on the uplands. Re-wet, rewild the land and get paid for doing it.
I would actually totally disagree with the man. I think, look, we don't want a Jurassic Park, let's put it that way. And when he says there that we need to get rid of sheep. Now, I farm in West Kerry, all our hills back there are more like cliffs, green patches and stuff like that. We need sheep to graze those areas. Previous to having sheep there, we had herds of goats and stuff. They're the same footprint as sheep. So I wouldn't accept what he's saying there to do with this.
Do you make money from the sheep, though? Is it worthwhile?
Well, I do make a bit of money. I won't get rich in it, but it's a way of life for me. Do you know, I grew up in a Gaeltacht community. It was a rich Gaeltacht farming community. We had sheep farming, we had a small bit of dairying, we had light cattle and stuff, and it was a way of life. We weren't very rich, we were poor people. But, you know, it was rich in other ways. You know, it mightn't be rich money-wise, but it the quality of life that to do with farming on these lands and stuff. And, you know, our culture, it's part of our culture. And to do away with that, you know, and the fanciful idea that we'll turn these places into a Jurassic Park, you know, I think it beggars belief.
Yeah, I suppose, John Joe, look, people said that cutting turf was part of our culture too, and we have seen the damage that that was doing and the changes that were put in place to try and reverse that. Do you think that that argument holds sway now when we're seeing climate change happening before our eyes?
Look, and we can see climate change happening before our eyes. We're farmers on the ground. We deal with it every day of the year. You know, we're the environmentalists. We can see what's happening. And we need animals on these grounds to make the carbon circle, to make everything work properly. You need grazers on this type of ground. It's madness to say that we take all animals off of these places, leave the place go wild, and then have a build-up of fuel and everything else there. What are we going to do in the future? Are we going to build a fire brigade or a fire station in the bottom every one of these mountains, because just all it takes is one blackguard to go out with a box of matches and leave the the match off.
Porrick, you want to come in there?
Yeah, so I don't understand the references to Jurassic Park. What we're trying to do is bring nature back from the edge of extinction. And nature is also part of our culture. I accept that farming is part of our culture, but we have to do it in a way that is restorative, that can address the climate and biodiversity crisis. According to Chagask, sheep farmers get paid 16,000 euro a year. This is a poverty wage. So I don't see how this system is working for anybody. And bear in mind that the INHFA campaigned vigorously against the Nature Restoration Law. The Nature Restoration Law will bring in new options for farmers. It'll bring in new income streams. I think it'll bring hope and revitalization to rural areas. So I think there is an awful dearth of leadership in farm organizations, that they are failing to see these opportunities and failing to provide options for farmers.
You're saying John Joe Fitzgerald is failing to see the opportunity here.
Yes, I'm totally saying that, and the INHFA as well, and other farm organisations who battled against the Nature Restoration Law. The future is in nature restoration and high nature value farming. We don't have to eliminate farming. We do have to eliminate sheep from peatlands and the hills. But I think if we do that, there is a bright future for the uplands.
Well, look, John Joe lives there, farms there, has done for generations, his family has. He says we need the grazers to square the circle here.
We need grazers in some places. Other habitats, such as blanket bogs, which are critically important for climate and biodiversity, should not be grazed. This is what the science is telling us. They definitely shouldn't be burnt, and they shouldn't be grazed at all. There are some habitats that can tolerate grazing, and that grazing is even good for some habitats. We have to define where those areas are and get the measures right in the right place.
What about the argument that if you have grazers there and if you do this burning, it keeps the vegetation low and actually reduces the risk of fire?
So there is something to that, because fire is an increasing risk now, particularly if we get periods of drought. But bearing in mind, Ireland is not the Mediterranean. And so what we want to do in Ireland is to restore the native vegetation. John Joe mentioned Killarney National Park. What we saw was that when the flames reached the forest in Killarney, the fire went out. So our native forests are not flammable. Wet bogs are not flammable. And the more we can promote this restoration of habitat, we'll reduce the flammability in the landscape and achieve biodiversity and climate goals.
Okay, what do you say about that, John Joe, that the risk of fire here, if this is allowed to grow wild, is actually overblown?
No, I would totally disagree with him. Look, we've seen wildfires all over West Kerry, fires that were set off by blackguards and stuff. And in the end of the day, look, when the Habitats Directive came in for stay back in the 90s, those directives were brought in because we had pristine land and stuff. Now, the way that was mismanagement since those directives came in, and I suppose the policies that came out of Europe, the restrictions that were put on us, you know, managing our land in the traditional way we used to do it before these restrictions were put on us, you know, I can't pronounce the word right. It made everything worse, you know, and everything since then. Every policy since then has made actually things worse.
Yeah, you heard Porrick saying there that your organisation, the Irish Natura and Hill Farmers Association, you're not seeing the opportunity in nature restoration. What do you say to that?
Well, we can see the opportunity in it. Like, we were the farming organisation that went out because there were certain things in the Nature Restoration Law that was coming our direction, and that the burden of the Nature Restoration Law would fall back on our lands and SACs and stuff. Now, we campaigned to have it voluntary, which they were saying first day, look, it is voluntary, it isn't voluntary. Nobody knew where they stand. But for we going through the fine print and the Nature Restoration Law, you know, things would be a lot worse. It, you know, it was as bad. We went to Europe and stuff. We met MEPs and stuff. They hadn't a clue what was in the Nature Restoration Law. We had to go and educate them. And on top of that, we had a government in Dublin, which, you know, there was no conversation, there was no debate around the Nature Restoration Law, and it has all been, you know...
But the conversation's going to happen now, isn't that it? It passes at European level, then the government has to come up with a plan, and all of that has to be discussed, and the budget has to be found. So it comes back to Irish shores now. We'll know exactly what it looks like, but it will be the Irish people who will decide.
Well, it will be. And look, I suppose if they had been, I suppose, straight more forthcoming, I suppose, with information from the start. We went on the campaign 2 years ago, both the Nature Restoration Wild, because we could see what was in it.
Mm-hmm.
But the lack of information coming out from the government, the lack of engagement on their behalf, drove us, you know, to
but,
go
but
and
you're saying, But you're saying you won some changes and concessions, so you support it now?
As farmers, we don't support it because it was done undemocratically. You know, from start to finish, we had to fight tooth and nail. We had to fight with ministers. We had to fight, go out to Brussels with the commission, argue our points with them. You know, part of their, that was in the, one of the sections of this, that we would go buffalo farming, you know, and stuff like that. You know, that's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, you might
that we get
make,
rid of.
You might make more money from the buffalo than the sheep.
No, look, at the end of the day, buffalo wouldn't suit the type of ground we have. We had traditional cattle, which were very nice for the type of land we have and we farm. Those traditional breeds should have been kept. But, you know, between European policy, government policy, pushes down the road, have bigger cattle, have bigger this, have bigger that. And, you know, our traditional way of life and our traditional farming fell by the wayside.
All right, Pádraig, you want to come back in there?
Yeah, so I think there is a point to be made about how the Habitats Directive and nature conservation in general has been implemented over the last decades. I totally understand why farmers feel hard done by, that restrictions were brought in and no incentives and there was no communication with them. So there is a job of work to be done to rebuild trust with farmers that nature conservation can work. And that's a job for the state. And bearing in mind that it's not only sheep and burning that is affecting our uplands. We have state agencies like Caoilte that are managing the land that has been disastrous for biodiversity, and they don't seem to be doing very much about it. However, the approach to the farming organisations to this, instead of trying to come up with a path forward, has been basically to campaign for against everything in terms of addressing climate and biodiversity. And this is completely wrong-headed. The nature restoration was totally democratically approved. It was through multiple iterations. There were concessions, major watering down, and still they're rejecting it. And I think what's happening is they're denying farmers who are very willing to engage in nature restoration. They're denying those farmers new opportunities to diversify and make money.
It's interesting to hear both of your views, and there'll be a consultation period now on nature restoration law, and we'll get a good sense of what it might look like down the line. Pádraig Fogarty, ecologist, thank you for coming in. And John Joe Fitzgerald, National Vice President of the Irish Natura and Hill Farmers Association, thank you for joining us on the line. Coming up next, we'll talk about the strong connection between mental health and sleep.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.